Ladies and gentlemen, from the depths of flyover country in the heartland of America, the Kansas City on the other side of the mighty Mo, welcome to Season 3 of Hitting the Bricks with Kathleen, the genealogy podcast that has your questions and her answers. I am John, your humble hubby host. We have a special episode, A Trip North, and while Kathleen is presenting for the Iowa Genealogical Society, I'll be, well, doing whatever it is I do. So, let's start hitting the bricks. It's overcast today in Des Moines, Iowa. The drizzle has stopped and the trees are showing the beginnings of fall color. The reds stand out especially against the rain-darkened green. It's cool, but not anything a respectable Midwesterner would call cold. I'm standing outside the state capitol, a modified Renaissance-style building capped with a central dome covered in thin sheets of 23-karat gold, or so say my recent Google searches. Cannons from various wars are displayed outside the Capitol and point toward downtown. And if you look in their direction, past the bronze statue called the Pioneers of the Territory, down East Locust Street, the squat 19th century looking brick structures slowly rise into the modern glass, concrete, and steel buildings of downtown Des Moines. If I can trust my Google searches, Des Moines gets its name from the French, River of Monks. The French were trading fur and exploring even when the territory was still under Spanish jurisdiction. But long before the French and the Spanish made their way to this land, as far as the eye can see, was occupied by the Ocheti Chacohueg, or Seven Council Fires. Each of the fires stood for a nation, stood for a people. And while so much has changed, the 99 counties in Iowa are peppered with the names of those people and tribes. Alamaki, Apanus, Blackhawk, Cherokee, Chickasaw, Keokuk, Potawatomi. The state itself took its name from the indigenous peoples. Names are interesting that way. They connect us to the past, and today I'm here in Iowa with Kathleen at the Iowa Genealogical Society. She's presenting to a large group of researchers looking for connections to family names. We were getting ready to head out from the hotel this morning when Kathleen's phone rang. She takes a call, but we need to get started. She likes to arrive early to make sure things are set up. So we get in the car and we make the short drive to IGS from the hotel. Kathleen and I both share the compulsion to be extra early instead of a minute late to anything, except for walking the dog. Chewy and I seem to always be waiting at the door for Kathleen before we can get started. Not a complaint, it's just an observation. I think genealogy is often thought of as a pastime for the elderly. The room where Kathleen will present is nearly full, and yes, there's a fair amount of gray hair represented. But the people here are far from going anywhere gently. Joe Solem is the president of IGS, and I got a chance to sit down with him in a somewhat quiet corner of the adjoining library to the presentation room. He has a head full of white hair. He's wearing jeans and a maroon sweater and carries himself like someone much younger than his age, which is somewhere in the upper 70s. In fact, he's a volunteer fireman.
Yeah, this is the library section where we're at right here and where the research is done. We've got microfilm, we've got newspapers, cabinet after cabinet of information, as well as a row after row of books to do research with.
What did you do before doing this?
I've spent a career in information technology. Mm-hmm. However, once I retired, I said, I don't want anything to do with it anymore. My thing today is I just want to turn on a computer and it works. I don't want to have to troubleshoot, etc. After one of the things I did after I retired, I've become a volunteer firefighter. So that's where my true passion is. Cool. And it's been a challenge sometimes. And I try to lean on the folks that are here. When I took over, I said, I'm not here to micromanage, but there is an outstanding group of volunteers in this organization and great committees, and I am not here to change that boat. It's going in the right direction. One of the things, we were very fortunate through a couple connections that there was a company in Des Moines that was getting rid of one of their buildings, and they had a lot of office furniture to get rid of, and we reached out to them. And we hauled several truckloads of chairs and desks and et cetera. And what can we do with all this? What's the future vision? And so we decided, okay, we're going to turn this into a conference center that not only IGS can use, but we can open it up to surrounding entities in the community. We're currently working on being able to put our book collection, our library resources, up online so people can go online, do some research, and say, hey, IGS has the information I'm looking for. We've come a long ways providing research material, conference center, speakers, conferences, and we're going to continue to build on that success.
Joe, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate
it. My pleasure, John.
Back on stage, Joe finishes introducing Kathleen to the packed room. She's wearing a really bright cyan jacket that jumps from the silver background of her slides projected behind her. She takes the mic, and the applause fades to murmurs, and then to near silence. Well, since she's busy, let me tell you a bit about me. See, I grew up in a small family. Mostly, it seemed, there was just five of us. I'm the child of older parents. My dad was 53 when I was born, and my mom was 40. I know, right? When I was born, we were in California, and so were my grandparents on my dad's side. Now, my mom's parents were in Texas, and when I was about three, we moved to Virginia, so my memories of grandparents, aunts, and uncles are spotty at best. Now, my mom was 13 years younger than my dad, and her youngest brother, Theodore, was 11 years younger than her. And because of those two age gaps, we got to know our Uncle Ted and our cousins pretty well, at least when we were young. My two brothers and I were close in age to Uncle Ted's three children, and so on the rare opportunities for visits, the six of us would pair off and find what trouble we could get into with our cousins. Now, Kathleen often says that cousins are your first real friends. I know that's especially true for her. In fact, in the last few months since I retired, I've grown used to hearing her on the phone mostly once, but sometimes two and three times a day, chatting with her cousin Shelley in Wichita. See, unlike the cross-country distance that my family had, Kathleen grew up in Kansas City and Shelley was in Wichita. In Midwest driving terms, that's nearly neighbors, and there was lots of back and forth over the years to visit her aunts and uncles and cousins. And if Kathleen is laughing from the other room, I don't usually have to ask who she's on the phone with. But they talk about things, whatever first friends talk about. I don't think I want to know any specifics. There's a break in the presentations, and I sneak a couple of questions in on Kathleen. I ask if she thinks it's important that people are named for ancestors.
I was named after both my grandmothers, Kathleen Luella and Alberta Ruth. My name is Kathleen Ruth. It was a family tradition in my family that we had names that carried on, especially on my grandmother's side. So it meant a lot because I'll say I'm named after my grandmother, Kathleen, whereas my mother's first cousin was named after her grandmother. And I think it's part of our tradition, especially for the women. We don't see it in the men so much. Every once in a while you see someone named after their father, but not necessarily a junior. Tell you the truth, I think it's more important to the parents naming someone after their mothers than it is for me. It was very important for my mother and my father to have both their mothers in my name.
So talking about names, I always thought my name was more like a placeholder. John. A bit of background. My name, until the moment I was born, was Mary. Surprise. And so it happened that on my birthday, the Second Vatican Council was convened by Pope John the 23rd. I always had this image of my naming. Mom and Dad in a hospital room, a folded newspaper on a chair. Fran, says my dad, we could still call him Mary. Al, we can't do that, chides my mother. Well, what are we going to name him? Dad asks. Mom looks around the room, points to an article in the newspaper about Pope John. That'll do, she says. and they snapped the only photo that was ever taken of me and took me home to disappoint my older brothers. The end. Here's the thing. That might be true. Mom did tell me I was named after Pope John, and maybe she didn't know, and for that matter, maybe Dad didn't know, that there have been John Brants in the family for generations. My great-great-grandfather had a brother named John. I think that makes him my great-great-granduncle. It's just a name, but it's a connection I didn't know was there. Why do you like doing genealogy presentations?
When I'm with my clients, it's just one-on-one. But I could take that same knowledge, write a blog about it, not about the client themselves, about how I research the process in researching, and I can share it for those who want to do themselves. The reason I think people want to do it themselves, to me, that's where the joy comes in genealogy, that you actually are finding your own ancestors. I want you to work out that first time, that excitement of the first time you see your ancestors' names in documents, and kind of create that story in relationship to your own family stories. So I think that's important that people really do their own research. So I've dedicated time to teach it, whether it's through a blog, the podcast, or presentations.
So Kathleen's right. It's a lot of fun being the one that finds out family information. And here's what's happened to my little family of five. My dad had a younger brother, 16 years younger. Now, I know I met him, but I'm pretty sure only once. He had six kids. My dad's younger sister by 9 years had three kids. I found nine living first cousins that I did not know I had. So my little family isn't so little. We just haven't had much connection. I sit in on Kathleen's last presentation, and seriously, she is so much fun to listen to and watch. The information she keeps available in her brain, I'd have to forget the last 5 years to make room for half of it. And the responses to the surveys about the presentations have been great. Of course, Kathleen is more interested in any negative comments. It's the only way I get better, she says. It's her all over. In fact, back in 2008, when Kathleen barely had her blog up and running, she wrote a post on customer service surveys and how important it is that you get feedback from your client. She's held to that as far as I know since then. Fortunately, after 26 years of marriage, I no longer have to complete the online portion of the survey after every meal she makes. She says if I say thank you and I can still walk, then she'll call it a win. The week following the presentation at IGS was a train wreck of catching up on everything we hadn't had time to do before we left for Iowa. Even if it's for 2 days, it seems like the world saves up 4 days of work to catch up on. But eventually, after getting the bugs off the front end of my car and putting Kathleen's car into the shop and making a trip to Wichita, there was finally a morning that Kathleen and I were sitting on the couch relaxing with Chewy. And he was looking out the window at all the squirrels he was going to terrorize just as soon as he finished his nap. I asked Kathleen a rather pointed question. Has genealogy research had an impact on how you view life and death? I asked the question because of that phone call the morning of the presentation. That call was from Kathleen's first cousin once removed, her cousin Shelley's daughter. Sometime between 3 and 5 that morning, Shelley had passed.
Well, I don't know if it has or has not, but I can say that it gives me a different viewpoint on what the descendants should be doing with an ancestor's life or death. They leave a legacy, and I think it's up to us to carry that legacy, either through their story or through our actions, or both. My first question now probably is, how do they contribute to the universal consciousness? Like, what is it that they've added when they were on Earth? What did they do that was special? A lot of people think, oh, they were just farmers, but they were never just farmers. They were mothers, they were church people, they were community givers, or they were black sheep. Whatever they were, don't forget them and their story. Share it. I think that we, it's up to us to keep who they were authentic. And that's the most important thing to me.
I've been putting a lot of data in a genealogy tree of my little expanding family. Birth, marriage, where they lived during a particular census. And more often than not, for each person I've added in my tree, I've added a date of birth and a date of death. And that second date seems so final. There's a start and there's an end. Maybe in part it is true that family history and genealogy tend to attract those of us who have a few more birthdays under our belt than others do. I've noticed in myself, the older I get, the more I tend to look back. It would seem at a certain age, there's more time behind us than there is in front of us. But at her memorial, Shelley's son spoke of how his mother was a conduit of the love she got from her grandparents, how she spoke of their love, and that he, now with his son, saw this extraordinary gift that's been quietly passed down generation to generation. Now he was entrusted to pass that gift onto his family so they would pass his mother's love to their families. As I listened, I thought, there really is nothing final about Shelley's second date. Her connection is as strong as ever. Her story continues. Kathleen said it's up to us to carry our ancestors' legacy. So now I'm thinking there's a lot more time in front of us than behind us. Everybody's story continues. I said names connect us to our past, like indigenous names that still lay claim to so much of the land we walk on. But I'm not sure that connection to our past is what genealogists are looking for. Seriously, if you want to see a genealogist's eyes get big, find a common ancestor surname between you that's even close to the same, and all of a sudden you're a sixth cousin once removed from your grandfather's step-aunt that lived in Alsace-Lorraine about the same time as Napoleon was asking their great-great-grandfather's fourth cousin thrice removed to paint the ballroom in Versailles periwinkle. Of course, there's researching and verification and documentation, but genealogy is not just about the past. Kathleen keeps telling me to stop reaching back on my research and support what I have with documentation. But that's hard for a hobbyist like me. I'd love for her to take over, but I can't afford her rates. I'm retired after all. But I will tell you this. I believe I found my fourth great-grandfather on my dad's side, Hans Brandt. He was born in 1745. I don't have any more information on him. There's just a dash following his date of birth. And for now, that seems totally appropriate. I'm here. So is Hans. I'm beginning to think this genealogy stuff is about something totally different than connecting with the past. How many times have you described a friend by saying, well, they're like family? How many sisters from other misters and brothers from other mothers do you have? I've got a lot. And if you ask mitochondrial Eve and Y chromosomal Adam, they might be totally confused about the concept of more than one family on the entire planet. Explaining discrete family lines to them would be like telling your parents you and your siblings aren't related because you live in different houses. So genealogy is not so much about connecting to our past. Maybe it's more about connecting to each other. And we don't really need a common surname to do that. Well, you've made it to the end of another episode. Thanks so much for staying. Thanks to the Iowa Genealogical Society and, of course, Joe Solom for his time. Thanks to Chewy Chewbacca Brandt, our part-time couch potato and full-time fuzzy boy, for his unwavering lack of interest in anything we're doing. The theme song to Hitting the Bricks was written and performed by Tony Fistknuckle and the Amoebas. Watch for their next performance at the Heaven and Earth Grocery Store. We'd love to know what you think about the podcast, so stop by our Facebook page at Hitting the Bricks with Kathleen and let us know.